Well, greetings once again to all of Turdville. It is a three-day weekend, so you know what that means. Back at Memorial Day to start the summer, we brought in our friend the Golden Jackass to discuss current events. Back at the 4th of July, the middle of summer, we got caught up on all those events, and now here at the end of summer, it's time to do it one more time. It's a three-day weekend. You know what that means? It means a return of our good buddy, the Golden Jackass himself, Jim Willey. Jim is the editor of the Hat Trick Letter. Fabulous subscription service, can be found at goldenjackass.com, and a longtime friend of Turdville. Always a pleasure to speak with him. Jim, my friend, welcome back.
Good to be back. It's you know, it's always like weird memories to notice the end of the summer.
Yeah.
I have a lot of memories when I was young of sad end of the summer. In Costa Rica, it just doesn't work out that way. The summer is January, February, March. I mean, that's when the glorious weather is, when the kids are not in school. But now I'm just happy to see the football season start.
Exactly.
It's getting back into the swing of things. I mean, gosh, we've had 8 months done in this year.
Yeah.
And we still don't have a reset.
That's right. Well, there are a number of outstanding things that we could talk about over the next 45 minutes or so. But, you know, we've done all kinds of formats. I think the last time we did this over the 4th of July, didn't we have the webinar where people were submitting questions? Obviously, you and I could talk for hours. But in general, as I thought about this particular show, I thought, you know, I think I could group things into three main topics. And so I thought what we'd do this time, again, for everybody listening, is I've got three main topics. I'm going to ask Jim, or just kind of lay these out there, because they're not really questions. They're just kind of, again, they're just a topic for him to expand upon. I'm going to ask Jim these topics, and we're just let him roll. I might jump in every once in a while, Jim, I guess, and, you know, and have a follow-on, you know, point to add. But we've got three main topics. One, we're recording this here on Wednesday the 31st for release this weekend. There's going to be the employment report on Friday, which will have come out by the time most people listen to this. And then we're leading up to the FOMC meeting in a couple of weeks. And so the first main topic is going to be all this job owning by the Fed. What that means for interest rates and the bond market, what that then means for derivatives, negative interest rates around the world, QE in Bank of Japan and in Europe, and then eventually the banks in Europe, how that's impactful there. The second topic then, I'm going to talk about this G20 meeting that's coming up in September, and then the October inclusion of the yuan in the IMF's SDR, and what all this potentially means, because there's a lot of talk out there about what it could mean. And then the last question, we're going to get into that reset stuff again, you know, and the future of the dollar and some of the ideas that Jim has had that are now, again, being proven correct and being made mainstream, specifically within the Trump campaign. So with that as a backdrop, Jim, topic number one, like I said, this idea, the Fed is doing everything they can to once again make it seem like they control the markets and they're the most important thing ever, and they're going to jawbone their way into getting the markets to do what they want them to do. It's been particularly evident here this week in the markets. But what do you think? I mean, if they try to raise rates even further, what is that going to do to the yield curve? What's that going to do to the bond market? How will that affect derivatives? How will that impact all these banks around the world? That's the topic. Run with it, my friend.
Let me be very plain. I don't pay any heed. I don't pay any attention. I don't give a crap what the Fed says, nor do I give a crap about the non-farm jobs payroll report. I almost pay no attention to them. And by that, I miss nothing. Let me just repeat that. I am not distracted by economic propaganda and bullshit used to control markets like the stock and bond markets. I don't care what they say. I don't pay any attention to what they say. They don't say anything of substance or meaning, nothing with honesty or integrity. I ignore what they say completely. and I'm not distracted from what's happening. Apparently, the great majority prefer to be distracted and lied to so they can make money in the stock market, which I don't care about.
Yep.
I call them juicers. I have a client who just recently sent me a message, this and that. What do you think about certain mining stocks? I said, I don't care about them. Why don't you just, if you have a little profit, why don't you sell it and buy some silver coins and bars? Sounds like you like juice. The juice I like comes out of a jar. I just drank some grapefruit juice from Old Orchard before the interview started. That's the only juice I care about. Okay, so they talk about the economy improving. The most recent jobs report a month ago was this improvement, so I hear. Yet I turned to Zero Hedge and a couple of other competent sites, and I noticed that, well, they had a million reduction in jobs, but they called that an improvement after the adjustments.
Right.
I'm an expert in the adjustments from seasonal adjusting. That's what I did at Staples for almost 5 years. And we had a rule. You don't change the coefficients more than once every 3 years. In the U.S. government, they change them usually every 3 months and lately every single month to accommodate a certain narrative that they want to spout about regarding propaganda. Okay, so if they talk about a strong jobs report, it means what they want to do is they want to justify higher rates. If they want to raise rates, who are they appealing to? Well, they're trapped. They're trapped without any options. They've been trapped for 4 years. I started talking back in 2013. They have no options. They have no alternatives. They have no weapons. They've spent everything. And that is a common theme among expert economists and financial analysts who know bloody well. They can't do anything. If they do talk about raising rates, what is their emphasis? What is their priority? To me, it's kind of simple. We need to produce more demand for treasury bonds, and the way to do that is to increase the bond yield, the reward for people investing. We can't offer them nothing on a bond yield, and I think we're about to see the managers of treasury bonds running scared, because we're going to get a run on the 10-year yield below 1.5%. I think it's a little above 1.5% right now.
Yep.
I made a forecast several months ago when we were around 1.9 that we're going to make a run to 1.5. And that happened.
Yep. Another correct forecast.
Right. By the way, I got a list of correct forecasts. If we ever get the time, it's I think about 12 or 13 correct forecasts in the last 2 years. I need to update my web page. I'm having trouble updating my web page for the forecast because with each carriage return, it's giving me 6 or 8, and I can't even remove. Anyway, it's messy. Okay, so then the Fed comes out with speeches preliminary to the Fed Open Mouth Committee. I'm sorry, Open Market Committee. Yeah, I know.
I like it.
But that was a great – it's a great phrase that was invented 15, 20 years ago. If you don't have any policy left, then at least make your words
right.
be of value.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, the words are propaganda. So Janet Yellen – let me just give you a quick background on Janet Yellen. In the late Greenspan years, I think – between 2001 and 4 or 5, she was the main opponent and antagonist of Greenspan and the New York Fed Dudley. So wasn't it clever to make her Fed head? Remove the chief antagonist and elevate that person to the Fed head when everything's broken from the policies she warned against with Greenspan at the late stage and all through the Bernanke years. She told them that QE was a disastrous idea. She told them they need to return toward normal rates in 2003 and 4 and not stay low. Anyway, Yellen is talking about raising rates, and it's absolutely hilarious. It's ludicrous. It's stupid. It's okay. They cannot raise rates. I've made this point many, many times.
Make it again, would you?
If they raise rates, they wreck the bond carry trade, where the Wall Street banks are borrowing free money and investing in the Treasury bond. That's one of the biggest reasons why the Treasury bond is going down in yield. The rally is from Wall Street banks that refuse to make commercial loans to major clients and instead would prefer the no-risk strategy with the Fed winking to them at all times, don't worry, we're not going to raise rates. Don't worry, we're not going to raise rates. They borrow at zero and they invest at 2%.
Mm-hmm.
They load on the futures contract leverage of 25 or 30 to 1, and poof, they got a 50% annual return. Why would they want to stop that? So they're not going to stop that, and the Fed's not going to wreck that by raising the interest rate, which would reduce, not just reduce the profit, it would send the entire trade into reverse. The other reason they're not going to raise rates is that the interest rate swap derivative is producing, I would say, somewhere around 80% of all Treasury bond demand. It's all 80% artificial. And how does that work? Well, I'm not going to get into a long explanation. I just got an email from someone saying, Jim, why don't you make a long explanation about how the interest rate swap derivative works? And I said, I don't have time. I've done some explanations, but if you want more, probably contact some of the work of Rob Kirby. In Toronto, he does great work at Kirby Analytics. But the interest rate swap derivative takes, again, as a feeder to the system, the 0% input and does coupon versus other bond and does a swap on the short term versus swap on the long term. And all of a sudden, out comes a few $1 billion in demand for the Treasury bond. Based on what? Nothing.
Right.
They can't wreck that.
No.
Okay, so if the Fed raises rates, Craig, it is to scuttle the system and blame it on foreigners who would sell the bond. The foreigners are selling the bond, and the QE architects are lapping it all up. The Fed wants to blame any problem on foreigners because they never blame themselves. They want to blame China, the chief, the major creditor of Treasury bonds. They still own over $1 trillion. The Japanese own about $1 trillion. Okay, that's $2 trillion. And now I'm hearing the debt is over $20 trillion right now.
Yeah, yeah. Just that's just a notional.
Here's a unique question. For over 2 years, we've had no debt limit applied to the U.S. government. Debt.
Right.
Why is that?
No budgets either.
And I think the answer is very simple. Because they already defaulted. Because they're already in receivership. Because now the only people who don't know what's going on is the public. And they're allowing the debt to rise because there's something in the balance right now called the reset. I just got some extraordinary information in the last week. London Paul contacted me and said, Jim, I've got a contact. I've got a source. And this person is loaded with information and loaded with high-level sources from four different Wall Street banks. And what he told me was that in March, the Chinese were ready to launch a gold-backed yuan currency. And the United States told them that would be considered a declaration of war. Don't do it. So the Chinese government and financial leaders said, okay, we won't do it, but your dollar-based system is collapsing. And we're going to be ready with this device, with this platform, with this entire method for global trade and banking, when your system collapses, which you will get 100% of the blame for. And the second message from this person with the contact at four Wall Street banks was that all four high-level people at the Wall Street banks said the same thing. There have been about 8 incidents of systemic and financial market failure just since July 1st. Every one of them was patched up with Bush narcotics money, and the events are happening with a shorter time span between them, and none of the four expect the current system to be standing in January.
Can I stop? What would be an example of one of those systemic events, Jim? I mean, can you describe what one would be that we haven't seen, or that, you know, would happen but we didn't know about?
Sure, Bank of America failure overnight.
And what does that mean? I mean, what does that mean for people that are like, wait a second, I can still go to Bank of America. I don't understand.
No, after that failure, the door would be closed.
No, I'm talking about
their money happened, would not be available.
What has happened since July? What are these 6 or 7 events that London Paul was talking about?
Bank failures overnight.
Okay, I got you. All right.
A Lehman event overnight. Lehman times 10. And exactly what I've been warning about, a systemic Lehman event. If Bank of America shuts down, so will J.P. Morgan and Citibank.
So these were patched up and...
with narco money.
And nobody even knew they happened.
No one in the public knew it happened.
Got it.
The public doesn't know jack shit.
Right.
They're not informed jack shit.
All right, so back to what you were
talking about. Talking about not just the banks failing, but the treasury bond market failing.
And back to where I interrupted you.
Massive cracks in the U.S. Treasury bond market are being patched. In other words, say South Korea and China and India and 3 other nations put an order to sell a huge block of Treasury bonds, and it's maybe $18 billion overnight, and they can't handle it.
We've seen those numbers, Jim. Zero Hedge
Treasury
had those.
Treasury bond seizure is what I'm referring to.
Well, zero
bond
Hedge had
markets,
those.
Bond market seizure coupled with bank overnight failure. Okay? Now, the irony of this is that the Bush narcotics money is not being exhausted, because we're talking about maybe $7 trillion of narco money. You don't exhaust $7 trillion quickly. But we're talking about billions and billions overnight being patched. And I remember one event in September of 2010 where it was $13 billion of Bush money that just patched a single overnight event with Bank of America. That was when I asked The Voice. There was an elite U.S. figure who did a multi-billion patch for a big Wall Street bank, and he said, yeah, Bush, $13 billion, Bank of America. I mean, I didn't give him the information. I gave him a hint, and he filled in all three blanks. Okay, so if 2010 was $13 billion on a single bank patch, you think it's bigger now? Well, yeah, and there are 8 of them. So we might have something like overnight events that are approaching $100 billion in failures. And not one of the four sources believes that the system will be making it to January. Okay, so the Fed's talking about a rate hike. It's absolutely insane. They're not going to wreck the profit platforms, the bond carry trade for the Wall Street banks. They're not going to wreck QE. What are they going to do? They're going to do a rate hike and say, oops, we just killed the entire QE machinery. Oops, we don't have any more bond demand for the Treasury, and we have a default. So if they do it, it will be a scuttle. Okay. I don't believe anything about a rate hike. The rate hike that we had last December was nothing more than adjustment for reverse repos that enabled the Wall Street banks to give up their cash to the Fed, take in Treasury bonds, and build a higher tower of Babel with a smaller footprint as a base. In other words, bigger leverage, more debt. Bigger ratio in leverage. and more debt. Just think of suddenly after the December rate hike, supposedly last year, the end of 2015, the Sears Tower is not 110 stories, it's 160, and they reduced the base by 30%.
Yeah.
So it's less stable.
Yeah.
Now, what do interest rate swaps and other derivatives dislike? Movement. Wind. Think of the Sears Tower enduring wind from any direction. We have the Treasury bonds down on the yield from 1.7 something to 1.5 something, and the derivatives don't like it. They're having a harder time. I'm going to make a stand here. I'm saying every month the Fed is covering derivative holes on the tune of $5 to $10 trillion per month. They can't sustain this.
Right.
Now, a lot of naive observers write to me and say, but Jim, you know, it's just all funny money. Can't they just print unlimited? They can print unlimited, but they cannot manage the machinery. They can't connect adequately the machinery, say, to the Italian banking system, which I think is the Achilles heel.
Right, right.
The German banking system and the Italian banking system are the Achilles heel right now.
Basically, too many plates spinning.
Too many plates spinning, but it's not just that. It's too many very strong cables.
Yeah.
Connecting other contraptions.
Yeah, levers and yeah.
Levers and cables. You pull on one, and oops, you just yanked the Italian machinery.
Right, or five other ones. Yeah.
Right, right, and they're 20 all tied together after Lehman Brothers. They're all tied together after Lehman Brothers, which means if any one of them starts jerking, it pulls two or three others quickly. They're having trouble managing this complex
system.
Perpetual motion machine. It's all based in insolvency. And I have a new axiom that I like to pronounce. It's like a rule of law, a reality. QE declares the big banks too big to fail. QE printed a lot of money to cover a lot of bonds, a lot of impaired debt.
Yep.
And what they did was they guaranteed a huge amount of liquidity for insolvent financial structures so that they would not go bankrupt. It's not stimulus. It's failure prevention.
Right.
But QE guarantees a killed economy. So by saving the too big to fail banks, they've killed the economy. They don't really care. Because they don't care about you. They don't care about your job, your income, your life savings, or anything. They don't care if they kill you and sell your liver. They don't care about you. They care about retaining power and retaining control of the dollar printing press, because I think they're printing about $50 to $100 trillion a month.
My goodness.
Saving the derivatives.
Trying to cover up all those derivatives.
Right.
Jim, I want to jump. All right. So I'm going to use that as a segue then to go back to two things you just mentioned and then tie them into umbrella topic number two. You said that a source told you about the Chinese wanted to roll out a gold-backed yuan last March, and we're told that would be an act of war. There have been a rather interesting other events that could be considered actual acts of war in the last 6 months that have followed, but nonetheless, that, and then this notion that the system maybe can't even make it to January, and that the Chinese instead are just waiting for that ultimate collapse, which is something we've talked about for 5 years now, that's their design, that they put all this in, they're putting this infrastructure in place so that it's there next time. They were caught kind of unprepared in 2008, but when it all comes again, they'll have an infrastructure in place. Okay, so your umbrella now for topic number two is all this talk that's out there. I mean, all you got to do is Google G20 and China Yuan and SDR and all this stuff. And there's all kinds of talk on all sorts of websites about the G20 meeting that's going to be in China next month. and then the final and formal inclusion of the yuan in the IMF's SDR, which is coming in October, and how this might all tie together. There's even speculation that that gold-backed currency may be coming this fall. So anyway, there's your broad umbrella topic number two. Run with it.
I'm hearing the date of October 17th and October 31st. I'm hearing that a lot. It could be that in March the Chinese said, all right, we'll give you 6 or 8 months. Let you screw things up. All right, we'll let you show your cards for your financial corruption and your Zimbabwe-type monetary inflation. We'll let you expose all this, and we'll let your banks fail. We'll just watch you squirm. But we're going to be ready by late October. That could be what they said. I don't know. I wasn't there. I'm curious about the upcoming, what is it, Guangzhou, China? I'm curious about whether the United States will even show up.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
I mean, why would they? They'd just be pissed on and ridiculed and ignored. So maybe they'll, this is what they usually do, they'll send a junior member from the Treasury Department.
Yeah.
Someone who doesn't have the authority, someone who doesn't have any stature, and someone who won't know anything and won't be able to talk about anything. But, yeah, we attended.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be an insult back to them, too, to send
somebody like that. I made a forecast a couple of years ago. I said that the G20 will take over as the important global finance minister meeting, and the G8 will just kind of fade away as unimportant because they're all bankrupt.
Yeah.
The G7 nations plus Russia, the G7 nations are all bankrupt. So who cares about their meeting?
Yeah.
Now, I got a funny comment to make. We got the Jackson Hole meeting of the bankers, but remember the Davos Economic Forum?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Were there any corporate heads at the Economic Forum in Davos? Or was it just central bankers and major banks talking about economics?
Yeah, more or less.
Over barbecues and whiskey. Uh-huh. Okay, so the Davos Economics Forum was not about economics. It was just a European Jackson Hole for bankers.
Yeah.
And also for U.S.-based bankers who have international warrants for their arrest, but they don't apply to Switzerland because Switzerland's not Europe. Very interesting distinction.
Oh, yeah. How about that?
Yes. Okay. So what was the most recent economic forum? St. Petersburg. Mm-hmm. Were there any CEOs in attendance? Only a couple hundred, which is a couple hundred more than Davos Economic Forum. So was Davos an economic forum? Hell no. Was St. Pete? Hell yes. Was St. Pete the only economic forum in the last 10 years? Exactly. Okay, so we got a G20 meeting in China, and as a little background point, keep in mind the only contributors to the IMF, International Monetary Fund, has been China. So China controls the IMF. If you don't pay, you don't have a voice. U.S. and the Congress has not paid in 2014, 15, and 16 into the IMF. I think actually the Chinese told the U.S. president and the bankers who handle him, our little convenient puppet, the gay boy with the the puppet strings over his head, they told the U.S. do not contribute to the IMF. We don't want any confusion. China will contribute, and China will make the rules. Okay, so China took major control of the Federal Reserve over a year ago, controlling interest of the Federal Reserve, has control of the IMF, and now is pretty much running the G20 meeting. So where does the financial power lie? With China. This is very simple. What does the World Bank do? I don't know, they issue reports. Lately, they've issued some reports that have surprised me quite a bit, to the point that they're waking up to some realities, and maybe they're eating from the Chinese dinner plate. Okay, so what are they going to do in this G20 meeting in China? I don't know. I think they're not going to announce the gold-backed currency. I think they're going to describe its framework. I think they're going to say, this is what's coming. This is what we're working on. This is its set of features. This is its set of benefits. This is how it will serve as the remedy for the global financial crisis that the United States and the British have zero interest in fixing. QE is not a solution. It's a bank failure prevention policy. QE is not stimulus. It is a gigantic wet blanket and a destroyer of capital. QE wrecks the global financial and economic systems, the financial systems it destroys by driving out legitimate buyers, mm-hmm. investors.
Yep.
What happens is major holders of treasury bonds say, oh gosh, we got an opportunity to dump these with the big hands. And that's how the Fed's balance sheet moved up to $4.5 trillion. This is toxic asset. It's a sewer vat. It's an asset vat. Okay. I think they're going to describe in full form, maybe with some white papers and a PowerPoint presentation, the yuan-backed currency. I have a theory. I don't know if they're going to talk about this, but I've had a theory for the last year or two that a transitional tool will be a gold-backed yuan trade note.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned this on your show a couple of times.
Yeah, we've talked about it countless times.
Not just a gold trade note, but a gold-backed yuan RMB trade note. I think the gold trade note will be possibly the transition tool for the RMB gold-backed currency. Okay, if you have a currency, the main question is, where's it going to be used? What is it?
Right.
Okay, you don't just have a currency and put it on the wall. You have a gold-backed currency and say, this is what we're going to use for the gold trade note. Or this is what we're going to use for a gold-backed bond that's going to replace your toilet paper called treasury bonds in the global banking system. So there might be bonds in the banking system and gold trade notes for trade payment. Can I mention at this point, Craig, a great little anecdote about dollar rejection at ports?
By all means.
Okay, I've been making the point that we've been deceived about port facility problems like dock worker strikes and whatever. I think whenever you read about a dock worker strike in say, Los Angeles and Long Beach or Oakland, California, it's a lie. There might be some little dispute, but that's not why ships are queued up 30 long in the ocean outside off California coast. The issue is that they're turning down treasury bills for payment. Why? Because we're printing them.
Right.
Okay. The Fed and Bernanke said we have a device that costs nothing. No, they have a device that produces something that's worthless. It doesn't cost nothing to make. It produces something of no value.
Well said.
Very important point. I mean, it reminds me of my first month here. I asked my friend, how do I say, what does that cost? What does that cost? Carlos, how do I say, what does that cost? He said, ¿cuánto vale? I said, no, that's what's it worth. He said, same thing. I said, no, it's not.
It's not.
What does it cost? What is it worth? No, it might cost something with a discount and be worth more than what I paid for. Ooh. And he said, well, a good point. But here they say quanto vale. I refuse to say quanto vale here. I say quanto cuesta. What does it cost? Okay, so here's the story. I've been making this point about rejection of the treasury bills at port. I got an email from a client. Jim, I want you to know there was a high-level board meeting at Bobcat Corporation in North Dakota, and I had the pleasure of attending it, and I'm a subscriber, and I kept my mouth shut, but I was listening closely because the South Korean parent corporation of Bobcat, by the way, Bobcat makes like small caterpillar type
right.
equipment.
Small bulldozers, stuff like that.
Small bulldozer, trench diggers, yeah. And small forklifts, and things like that. Warehouse equipment and small construction equipment.
Yep.
Okay, but power equipment. Okay, and they're not cheap.
No.
I mean, a forklift is probably $8,000. I don't know, but
yeah.
They're not cheap. Okay, here's the issue. The parent Korean South Korean company says, we ship to the California coast and we refuse treasury bills. They're now trying to overcome the problem. And I'm thinking, I said to the client, well, maybe they need something like a gold-backed trade note. And he said, well, it may come, but we haven't heard it right now. All we have now is a problem. We're not moving product through the port. We got a log jam. They're not unloading because they're not accepting treasury bills. Okay, and I say this is like a rule of thumb of reality. For every story you do hear about, there must be 5 or 10 you don't hear about.
Right.
So I'm thinking that we have a growing trend here. And I've only heard of a couple instances where they're turning down dollars at ports. The other story is military in the Persian Gulf. They're buying diesel and they have to pay, the U.S. Navy has to pay in silver bars to the Arabs for diesel loading. Okay, very different. That's not standard commerce. Bobcat is standard commerce, and now that's my first little story. Okay, I think that the G20 is going to try to address some of the nagging, festering problems that have to do with trade payment. And why is trade payment so important? And why is that coming up so much? And it's kind of simple here, Craig. You know, the U.S. is always mentioned as being in firm control of financial markets, the currencies, the bonds, and all the things that are of paper, and they're all rigged markets, whether it's gold or LIBOR or the treasury bond market or U.S. government debt issuance. They're all rigged. They're all phony. They're all rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
But what does the East control? What do the emerging markets control? What do these BRICS nations and the alliance control? Industrial output. The U.S. set a record in 2015. We exported back to Asia and emerging markets 500,000 containers that were empty. We take their stuff, right?
Okay.
We take their stuff, we send them back stale air.
Dollars, basically, yeah.
we give them the treasury bills, which we print from our deficient economy that lacks critical mass for industry, and we ship back 500,000, half a million empty containers, and it's not stopped in 2016. So what are the chief exports from the United States? Military hardware, fraudulent bonds, diabetes, laced vaccines, and empty shipping containers.
Those are the big five right there.
It's sickening, Craig. It is truly sickening.
All right, so Jim, I think that is a perfect segue into umbrella topic number three, our last topic for this Labor Day weekend. You have mentioned, and as we said, we've discussed now for years, this idea of the gold-backed international trade note and how that is coming as part of the foundation, the backbone of the next global monetary system. You just mentioned again how this, you know, this is all part of where we are right now, that this is coming. Now, tying that into umbrella topic number three, which is, I guess, in a way, the dollar future, the U.S. election that's pending in 60 days. But now, let me throw this log on the fire. This came out 10 days ago. A lady by the name of Dr. Judy Shelton, who is an economist, one of the top economists working with the Trump campaign, has come out and publicly stated that perhaps we need to come up with a gold-backed U.S. Treasury bond. Now, putting all that together, Jim, doesn't that all seem like a rather an interesting coincidence? And I'll just let you pick it up and run with it from there.
Well, you know, if you come up with a gold-backed treasury bond, the immediate question I ask is, who's going to provide the $500 trillion worth of, well, okay, let's just stick with the U.S. government debt. How are you going to come up with the $1 trillion worth of gold for just the next year of deficits?
Do you think, Jim, hold on, I don't mean to interrupt you, but I mean, is it a possibility that these new gold-backed bonds would be swapped to the Chinese for their $1 trillion of nothing-backed bonds as a way of getting them to not just simply dump their bonds on the market? Anyway, that just kind of was my thinking.
No, I think that the Chinese are not going to accept paper for their toilet paper. They've got toilet paper, and they're trying to buy things with it, like, you know, the Greek Piraeus port.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? They've got designs. They're trying to buy right now some Venezuelan oil fields.
Okay.
They're trying to buy the Brazilian Petrobras, but that's kind of put on hold. They're trying to buy an Air Force base and a naval base in Nicaragua. They're trying to buy a Pakistani superhighway. You know, they're not interested in our shit paper. They're not going to trade their treasury bonds for more shit paper.
Even if it's supposedly backed by gold.
Well, I don't think they'll believe that. I think they would say, no, we would rather just buy gold with it and tell you guys to go to hell. Because if you say it's backed by gold, we're going to call you liars.
Yeah, no, I understand.
Because the United States has lied about everything on financial treaties and gold leases and everything. So, if we back our U.S. Treasury bonds with gold, is it just the new bonds for the new debt, or is it all $20 trillion?
It'd be new debt, I would think.
Okay, then what's going to happen to the old treasury bonds? Will they go worthless?
Good point.
I mean, you got to follow. You can't just sit down and look at one and go, well, that looks really cool. No, how about dealing with five questions like an analyst would, tied with reality?
Right.
If they say, okay, all right, fine. So we're dealing with $80 to $90 billion a month in new government debt. Where's the gold going to come from for, let's just call it $100 billion a month. Where's the $100 billion in gold going to come from? Because that's one-fifth of Fort Knox.
Allegedly.
We don't have it available. Where is it going to come from? Trump doesn't have it. What are they going to do? Are they going to confiscate the illegally gained Bush gold hoard?
They could reprice gold to, you know, multiples higher, I guess. They wouldn't have as much.
Okay, well, that's another issue entirely, and, you know, we can touch on that. I'm perfectly willing to touch on that, but, you know, let's get back here to the gold back.
I'm sorry, go ahead. Yeah.
Bond. It just raises more questions than problems that it solves. The problem is we've got a $1 trillion annual federal government deficit. Okay, if we issue a government gold-backed bond, will we say we're going to shut down the Pentagon and eliminate the budget so that we can remove half of the deficit?
Nope.
Okay, well, that's a pretty definite no. I'm not so sure.
I'm not so sure about that.
I think we're going to get some tremendous compromises and shutdown of U.S. military bases. That's what I think is coming in the next year. Okay, if they do this, what will then happen with trade payment? If we're going to back government debt, new issued government debt with gold, first of all, what happens to old government debt, treasury bonds? Then what happens to trade payments, which are the treasury bills? What's going to happen with oil payments?
Mm-hmm.
Will the Saudis say, well, if the Americans are going to go to a gold-backed treasury bond, we'll start accepting gold trade notes, or just RMB currency for all our Asian sales? And then you get the immediate question, well, is the RMB gold backed too? And I really think we're going to start seeing soon the gold-backed trade note because it fits like a glove. It solves the problem that Bobcat's having. Yep. It solves the problem that a lot of emerging market nations are having. They don't want dollar payments. They don't trust the rising value of the dollar because we're printing it. I maintain this point. And I had a client just a couple of days ago said to me again, so the dollar's going to continue to rise, right? And rise some more before it vanishes. I said, yes, exactly. Okay, how does it vanish? It vanishes in the form of a Chinese RMB gold-backed with the widespread usage of a gold-backed trade note. Okay, whenever you have gold-backed bond or trade note, you've got to think immediately about what happens not just with past bonds. You have to think about what happens with the nations that are in a trade deficit. The other nation, okay, if the United States has a gold-backed treasury bond to cover $100 billion or so a month in deficit, what happens to Venezuela and their monthly government deficit? What happens to France and its monthly deficit? What happens to Italy and its monthly deficit? What happens to little Latvia and its monthly deficit? So will the United States set the world trend for gold-backed deficit finance? Well, it's an impossibility.
Yeah, Latvia you're right.
doesn't have any gold.
Yeah.
France doesn't have jack shit for gold, except what they hold stolen from the Russian Empire in 1910. I think this raises a lot of questions. The biggest reason why the reset has not happened yet is very simple. The deficit nations are not prepared to yield on billions and billions of hard assets to resolve the trade deficits. You can't have honest financing of bonds, honest financing and payments in trade, without some remedy ready in the wings for handling the deficits, whether they're government deficits or they're trade deficits. The United States does not want a gold-backed dollar because we don't want to lose $500 billion a year, mostly to the Chinese, in gold.
Right, right.
And what are they going to do, have swaps? Okay, I love this argument, Jim, but you don't understand. The U.S. is going to have energy behind our new dollar. And I say, well, fine, let me do some calculation and get back to you because I think you're dead wrong and shallow in your brain stem. So here was my calculation. Take a look at the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Take a look at the millions of barrels of oil it contains. Multiply it just by 50 for some easy math. What do you get? $70 billion. So, I'm sorry, $7 billion. $7 billion. How many strategic oil reserves do you need to cover 1 year of deficit for the United States? 70. I came up with 71, Craig. 71 strategic petroleum reserves will cover 1 year of U.S. economy trade deficits. Do we have 70? No, we're not even going to want to give up one.
Right.
We're going to tell people, get the hell out of here, or we'll bring terrorism to your capital city.
So does this new, at the end of the day, Jim, does this new structure, as you mentioned when we first started talking, if the Chinese said in March we're ready to go, and they were told that's an act of war, and they said, okay, well, we'll just wait until the next collapse. At the end of the day, do these creditor nations, as you said, I mean, yeah, the debtors can sit there and say, yeah, you know, like you just said, but do the creditor nations wait that long? Do they wait until the collapse, or do they proactively just say, you know what, screw it, let's move?
I think the action, like with the stock market, happens at the margin. You know, if you got a bunch of troubled Apple stock, you don't worry about the major shareholders. You don't worry about those who have the strong hands. You worry about the ones who are going to be dumping tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
You worry about the margin. So to answer your question, I think the answer has to do with we've got all this U.S. government treasury bond debt sitting in our banks. It's ruining our system. We don't care that it's valued higher with a black hole effect going on with the treasury bonds right now that I talk about a lot in my work. We don't want any more. That's where rubber hits the road, at the margin, at the trade facility ports. Mm-hmm. We don't want any more treasuries. Mm-hmm. We don't want your treasury bonds. Mm-hmm. And that's when the Saudis say, we'll take RMB bonds. We'll change the petro standard. And other OPEC nations already are doing this. I've got this listed down. Nigeria and Algeria are right now taking RMB currency. So I'm on the verge of a correct forecast that I made about a year and a half or so ago that the OPEC nations and Saudis will lead the way toward RMB acceptance on oil transaction. That's at the margin, Craig.
Yeah, yeah.
The new purchases, how will they pay for them? We don't want any more of your treasury bills. Just like Bobcat in South Korea. Why would they refuse them? Aren't they valid? Well, yeah, they're valid. They're considered AAA. I mean, this is, you can't make this crap up.
Yeah.
We got toxic money that's flowing around the global arteries, commercial arteries, and killing organs, namely economies and their capital. And the Chinese have a solution. Okay, I made a call back in 2004 and 5 when I started this newsletter that the dollar in its last stage will be defended by war. And I think that's precisely what the Ukraine war was.
Oh, sure.
And I regard Syria and its war as an extension of Ukraine because the common denominator they have is Eastern natural gas supplying Western Europe. It's Gazprom through Ukraine, and it's Iranian gas through Syria. They need the Syrian ports to get the pipelines running straight to Europe. And I think we're going to see some pretty strange effects coming in. I think the Israelis are going to provide the last mile. That's a phrase. It might be the last 100 kilometers, but the last mile, I think, is going to be done by the Israelis. They're going to make sure that this thing happens because they're going to see a profit in it.
Right, right.
Besides, the Israelis have the giant Leviathan gas field.
Yeah, they have their own gas field. Yeah.
Right. So they're going to want to hook this up.
And just so folks know, I mean, you know, these are anecdotal stories and we're theorizing and you're making it that some folks might be sitting there going, yeah, well, this data is correct. I mean, all anybody has to do is do a Google search of Fed's custody holding of treasuries. And you can see in that and in the tick data that foreign held ownership of treasuries is declining and that demand has fallen off a cliff. So the statistics back all this up, that this is happening in the here and now, right, Jim?
Absolutely. In fact, we got some interesting little details with the TIC report, which I think stands for Treasury International Capital.
Yep.
The TIC report, TIC. The Saudi Arabians and their treasury bond holdings for the longest time have been bunched together with what they call OPEC. And now it's being segregated. And it's interesting that they segregated because I think after they segregated, they loaded with lies.
Yeah.
So they segregated as an attempt to say, now we're being more honest. No, you just got a new category in which you lie.
Like the derivative reports.
I mean, they're all lies.
Right.
I just heard something about Saudi. I talked to Cato. And by the way, Cato confirmed the entire story of the eight events since July of big Wall Street banks enduring overnight failures that got fixed by narco money. He confirmed it exactly. He said, yes, Jim, they're not going to be able to continue this much longer. I said, you think this January date that London Paul mentioned is about right? And he said, oh, I don't think it'll last till January. It's going to be a lot sooner than that. The breakdowns are happening way too quickly. And I said, well, you know, when I was doing reliability theory work in quality control, we used to look at the time between events. So the time between events is really getting jammed together. They're happening more rapidly, aren't they? He said, oh, absolutely. But here's what he also said. We talked about gold and the Arab gold, and I said, well, you know, UBS and Credit Suisse stories, that were all ruses. I mean, since when does the U.S. government have control of the Swiss banking system? He said, oh, absolutely. It's to steal their gold. I said, right, to steal the Arab gold. And he said, Jim, I got to tell you something. The Saudis saw, obviously, their own stolen gold accounts in Switzerland, in UBS and Credit Suisse. They saw it. They were really quite angry. But what can they do about it? Because the U.S. is their military protector.
Mm-hmm.
They got robbed by their protector.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, they could not stop it because they don't have another protector. That's why they're working. I said, is that why they're getting the Chinese protector? And he said, yeah, but I don't think the Chinese are going to step in like that. Okay, here's what he said. The Saudis admitted, okay, we lost a bunch of our Swiss gold. And now we saw the stolen gold in Libya. We saw the Arab Spring in Tunisia and Algeria. And he said, what the public doesn't know about Arab Spring is that it has a hidden motive to steal the central bank gold behind those governments' walls. They hire people to do the demonstrations. We hire the Muslim Brotherhood to go out there and create violence. And during the violence, there are bank robberies at the central banks with the Bush crime family mercenaries. So the Saudis moved all of their domestic gold because they're now having uprisings in Saudi land. They moved all their domestic gold to France and then quickly moved it all to Deutsche Bank. And I said, so that's what the Chinese are protecting with Deutsche Bank. And he said, yes, exactly. The Saudis are protecting their last remaining gold. I said, so when they abandon the royal palace and run for their lives, and some of the princes are caught and beheaded, there'll still be plenty of princes that make it out, and they're going to head straight beeline to Germany to claim their gold. And he said, pretty much.
Yeah.
So we're looking at the last days of the Saudi royal family rule. They're making extreme errors. I've got a couple of clients from European contractors. I don't want to give any more detail than professional contractors. You know, like electricity, like IT facilities, like, you know, petrochemical valves and all kinds of things. The Saudis are now 6 months late in paying their European contractors. Do you think they're late paying the U.S. military contractors for the hardware that they're using to commit war crimes in Yemen?
Yeah.
No. So we're looking at last stage events in Saudi land.
And again, Jim, I would add, anybody can look this stuff up. Look at what's happening to Saudi bank shares. Look what's happened to the Saudi credit default swaps.
Right.
All of this is happening right now.
And add one more. The Saudi rial forward currency. I featured this 2 months ago in the Hattrick letter. It's all the above. It's a credit default swap and their interest rate paid on their government bond. And they're having liquidity problems.
Right.
What they need is a central bank that prints money like our Fed does to prevent the bank failures. QE is to prevent, through the use of extreme liquidity, to prevent bank failures for insolvent structures. The Saudis don't have a QE, so their insolvent structures are about to break. They're looking to sell 10% share of Aramco. And I think the Chinese are looking to buy.
Right.
Maybe when you see that deal signed, the Saudis will announce that they accept RMB currency on oil sales.
Isn't that interesting when you think about it, Jim? Yeah.
Not just to Chinese, but to the Japanese and Korean and other Asian clients.
Yeah.
I think the RMB is going to become a regional currency for all Eastern Asia. Okay, this is all coming to a head, and it just looks like you look at this trouble area or that trouble area, they're all saying the same thing. We're going to just try to get to the end of the year. Well, I think everything's going to break by the end of the year.
Well, I tell you what, my friend, we are not scheduled for another, well, this would be a four-day holiday weekend at Thanksgiving. That's 90 days from now. God only knows what the world's going to look like by 90 days from now from the topics we've discussed. Who knows what we can do in between, but
we could have a Halloween interview.
Well, I tell you what, at this point, Jim, I'm trying to drive people to your website and to the hat trick letter because it may be 90 days before we can do this again. And anybody that's listening to this should immediately be going, you know, if I haven't ever signed up for the hat trick letter, maybe now would be a really good time. And I would say it's always been a really good time, but yeah, now would be a really good time. So Jim, tell everybody as we wrap, they go to goldenjackass.com. Is that where you start? And then how does it work from there?
Yeah. In fact, I just had two clients this week tell me, I heard your interview. I heard you mention the two compliments you get. And one of them being, I've just been relying on your public podcast interviews. And I waited a long time. I finally signed up and I'm glad I did. I don't know why I waited so long. I'm one of them. Two people sent me that message this week. And they said, Jim, I'm finding it spellbinding. Yeah. And I said, well, you know, welcome aboard. This is reality. You know, if you want something that's, you know, really watered down and weird and gets swallowed easily by the public, just read the New York Times. But this is reality where we have over an 80% correct forecast rate. So yeah, you go to www.goldenjackass.com. I started this in April of 2004. I honestly thought by 2010 we would see the end of the dollar. But what we got instead was the extraordinary measures to continue the liquidity, 0% is to continue the derivatives.
Right.
QE is to prevent the big banks from failing. This is what it's all about. But, you know, I thought this would see some more remedy, and I'm very disappointed in Western leaders. They're not looking for remedy. They're looking for continued power.
Right. They want to cling to power. Exactly.
And just take a look at the Ron Paul-inspired Fed audit that took place in 2009, to see that there was $23 trillion in loans at under 1% to the owners of the Federal Reserve. I don't think they'll ever repay those loans, and I think they will use that money, $23 trillion, $23,000 billion, to buy up the world assets when they go on sale from this great bust.
Yeah.
Okay, so anyway, it used to be, you know, when I started this up, Craig, this is the truth. You can go back to the Gold Eagle archive, and you could see that there were 40, 43, 45 articles per year that I wrote in the early years, building up the business, building up the promotion, the publicity of the message. After Lehman Brothers broke and after 0% hit, in 2009, I changed. I stopped writing every week. I got a little tired. Not so much the fingers. My fingers are pretty good. I can still type. I type it like 40 or 50 words a minute. And I don't look. I just type. So they go out fast. But I changed to one every 2 weeks. And then in 2013 or so, I decided I'm just going to do one a month because I'm getting more interview requests.
Sure.
So in 2012 and 13, I think that's when we actually started our interview scheme. I started getting a lot more interview requests from broader sources, some of them live shows, and most of them are very effective. You know, once in a while I get a little dud, and I don't repeat. I don't go back and say, well, let's do it again. No, it didn't go very well, and the guy just wasn't a good host and didn't ask good questions, didn't follow up in conversation. So I back off. I sometimes don't even tell them I'm backing off. I just say I'm really busy.
But you have anyway, you have two reports, two separate reports, right?
Yes. Yes. One is the I call it the Global Money War Report. It's really the global battle to defend the dollar, the King Dollar's reign of terror. It's to defend the dollar and to keep it in place. It's a very important report. Mm-hmm. And the second report is the Golden Currency Report. And that's about, you know, a lot more details, you know, the actual coin demand and what countries are importing a lot of gold. And I include the Russia and Chinese economic development, Silk Road issues in that. I try to include petrodollar concerns in with the currency chapter, those concerns. So there is a fine line. I sometimes decide, well, I can't put that in the first report. Let me put it in the second. I'm running out of space. So you know, there are little compromises that are made, but it's the Global Money War Report and the Golden Currency Report. And
all combined, it's called the Hat Trick Letter.
The two are the monthly publications for the Hat Trick Letter.
Gotcha.
They come back-to-back weeks. Sometimes they come out the same day if they're a little shorter. I just say, well, I can't have a 70-page report, so I make one 36 pages, the other one 34, and divide it up.
And it's all
found.
Go ahead.
No, I try to do some interesting things. Like people send me quotes. Jim, that's kind of a cool quote from Bastiat or Cicero or something. And I say, yeah, I might use that. So I put in quotes, and you know, Jim Rogers might have a quote. I have some quotes from James Grant, and I always have a quote section, and it used to be a page long with, you know, six or eight quotes, but now it's getting to be 2 and 3 pages long with some very interesting quotes.
I would imagine.
So it's been a labor of love, Craig, and I really enjoy it. I never get up in the morning and say, oh gosh, got to do this again. No, I didn't do that in my last Staples job, Staples headquarters. I never dragged my butt into my office at Staples headquarters outside Boston. I always thought, this could be fun. We always do something good, and I work with good people. I like my manager. I'm going to work. Got my yogurt, got my banana. I'm off to work. Off to work I go. Isn't it nice having a job? Even a job with stock options. Okay, we don't have stock options in the newsletter world, but we do have gold and silver bars.
That's right.
Those are your options.
And man, anybody that's listening to us, and I'm sure all your subscribers too, they understand the value of that. And like I said, there's no better time. I mean, after this last hour or so discussion, there's never been a better time to be a subscriber to the Hat Trick Letter. And I'd encourage everybody to check it out. Jim, it's going to be a crazy fall. I just can't even imagine what it's going to look like by the next time we talk, but I know I'm looking forward to it. I want to give you the rest of the day off, but not before thanking you for spending so much time with us.
I think we're going to see some fireworks, but we're also going to see some delays. And, you know, it really comes down to this. A country that has a solution, they can come out with a solution and fix some things, but be at risk of being murdered.
Yeah. And who knows, again, just like the Fed, all these different levers and pulleys and all that kind of stuff, you know, one moth flaps its wings in this process and it sets off a whole chain of events. And that's where you just don't know what the unknown unknowns are going to be.
Well, speaking of risk, of your own neck being broken or ripped off, Hillary is now giving campaign speeches with falsified platforms and crowds on the stage. And being revealed, and why is she doing this? Because she's afraid of being murdered. And she's also afraid of having exposed the very small crowds that she's attracting. and she's being exposed for faking her stage presence of like, you know, 50 people, where she walks up and nods at them and waves to them and winks at them and smiles and all that. She's being exposed by smartphones, which are being directed toward the podium and showing the blank stage.
Yeah. The empty crowd.
You gotta love these new technology devices. Hillary has noticed that some people have vanished from the elite ranks. And I wonder if it's this Fulford one ton of gold bounty that's at work.
Oh, Jim, you're going down a whole other path, man.
I know.
We're going to have to leave that there.
Leave people with, you know, an interesting thought like
that.
There you
go.
Did we ever expect that some of the most evil people in our Western world would be knocked off for a one-ton gold bounty? I'm told that Papa Bush is dead. He's been gone for 4 years.
What is it, like a dummy that they parade out there? Or what?
A double. All right. And the word I hear is it's a double that Barbara doesn't even talk to.
could be. Jim, I got to stop, man. We could keep going, but I got to stop. Not that I'm afraid of the topic, but it's been a long call already.
I'm just looking forward to the gay guy being out of the White House.
God.
The gay Kenyan with all his gay sex parties, where one of the victims was Harry Reid, Senator of Nevada.
And his husband, Mike. I know. All right,
yeah,
anyway,
Michael Robinson.
All right, I got to stop. Stop.
Son of a Chicago crack whore.
Stop.
Right.
Okay. Jim, thank you. We'll do it again soon. Everybody subscribe to the Hat Trick Letter. There's obviously more information there.
I'm sure glad I'm not the son of a Chicago crack whore.
At least no one's going to call you that. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening. And Jim, again, thanks. We'll speak to you again soon, my friend.
Okay. Thanks for having me on. That was fun.
Thanks, everybody.